you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Thousands of small business owners have discovered the benefits of Stamps.com in the recent months. They've been able to keep their businesses running and avoid the crowds at the post office all from their computer. With Stamps.com, you can print postage on demand and avoid going to the post office. And you'll save money with discounted rates you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com also offers UPS services with discounts up to 62% and no residential surcharges. Stamps.com brings all the services of the post office right to your computer from the comfort of your home or office. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or just working from home and you need to mail stuff, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, you just leave it for your mail carrier, schedule a pickup, or drop it in a mailbox. It's that simple. And like I said, with Stamps.com, you get great discounts too. 5 cents off every stamp and up to 62% off USPS and UPS shipping rates. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saves you time and money. And right now, our listeners can get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitments. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in problem. That's Stamps.com, and the promo code is PROBLEM. All right, let's start today's show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the libertarian Tupac, Dave Smith. He is the king of the caucus, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. It is Monday, usually the episode we phone in, but not on Martin Luther King Day, not on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Okay. As somewhere Martin Luther King has a father, and every time you don't say the junior, it's kind of like you're talking about him. And that guy didn't do shit. I don't actually know if that's true. He might have done a lot, but he didn't do as much as his son did. Anyway, how are you, Rob? How was your weekend?
I don't think I did anything. What about you?
Hung with the fam. I have a 2-year-old and a wife. I that's all I ever do. But I did. I watched the UFC. Whoo, Max Holloway. Whoo, you watched that fight?
I watched the highlights, boxing it up. It was fun.
Dude, Max Holloway is no joke. No joke. Holy shit. If you didn't see that fight, that was one of the better fights I've seen in quite a while. Max Holloway just went fought this guy, Qatar, who's like supposed to be the best boxer in the division, and put a boxing clinic on him. It was just incredible. All right. Anyway, this isn't a fight podcast. This is a podcast about war criminals. So let's focus back on them. All right. The day after tomorrow is Inauguration Day. Can I tell you, I have...
Trump's still going to release the Kraken. It's not over,
dude,
Dave.
There are people, and I don't know if they're fucking trolling or if it's just this, you know, this removed from reality. But I'll tell you, I've gotten messages from people who are like, you're crazy. You've missed the boat. Joe Biden will never be president. Donald Trump is still going to win. And here's how XYZ. And it's like, that is there's a weird, I don't know, like a psychological tendency or something where people get so like, it's like the ultimate form of cognitive dissonance, like the ultimate, I have dug my heels into the ground and no amount of evidence in front of me can change my mind. I mean, like, you know, I'm just a few messages that I've gotten, but I've gotten a few from people who are saying this. And it's like, so even after Trump has acknowledged that he's not going to be president in 2020, you're still trusting the plan and all this. So anyway, Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated the day after tomorrow. I say that with a large amount of confidence, and I will gladly admit I'm wrong if I am, but I don't think I am. But Joe Biden's going to be inaugurated, and man, is it going to be weird. It's like a virtual inauguration. So I don't exactly know what that means or how they're going to do it, but there'll be a lot of people there on Zoom, I guess. And it's also just going to be the most militarized inauguration of all time. And I think that is worth discussing.
And the military is just going to be standing there like, we're holding the crowds back. You wouldn't believe how many people wanted to be here for this.
Yeah, well, right. It's there, but there's something so creepy about it. And I think that, you know, the ruling elite in this country are experts at exploiting a crisis. This is what they do. They do it time and time again, and they talk openly about it. I mean, Henry Kissinger and Rahm Emanuel, and you can get lots of different quotes of some really powerful people talking about how what you do when you have a crisis is you realize that it's an opportunity. This is literally what Henry Kissinger said and what Rahm Emanuel said. When you have a crisis, presents an opportunity to do something that you couldn't have otherwise done, you know? So without 9/11, they couldn't have passed the Patriot Act, created the Department of Homeland Security, and invaded five countries. Like that just wasn't going to happen without a 9/11. But once there was a 9/11, then they can do that, you know. And these things always happen. You know, the economic crash of 2008 was an opportunity for Obamacare. I mean, they had tried to pass very similar, you know, government takeovers of healthcare before, but now you got a lot more broke people and a lot more people who are really worried about their healthcare costs. And this is the perfect opportunity to push that in. So that gets pushed in 2009, the year after, you know, this big economic disaster. So this is always how the situation works. And one of the things that is really effective about this strategy is that people are so focused on the crisis that they lose the plot. They lose the bigger picture of like what's actually going on here, you know, because you're so focused on like, it's like, oh, you see the most militarized inauguration ever. And it's like, yeah, well, there was this Capitol thing last week, you know, and this isn't even to downplay the crisis itself. I mean, oftentimes the crises are created by government, but not always. And that it's not to say that sometimes the crisis isn't a legitimate, horrible thing, but it's kind of like them trying to push sweeping gun control right after a mass shooting. It's like, it's not to say that the mass shooting wasn't horrible. It's just that if you zoom out and look at the bigger picture, you see a bunch of criminals who want to disarm the population. And that is the greater threat, much greater than the threat of a mass shooting. So what I'm thinking about as I see the military in Washington, D.C., and I see this kind of like, you know, installing of a president, this, you know, after a year of Americans being locked in their homes, after a year of the government, you know, taking this tyrannical power that couldn't have even been imagined in the previous year, in the previous month, couldn't have been imagined last February, you know? And now you see this incredibly militarized inauguration. It's just, it to me, I'm looking at the bigger picture of the direction this country's going in. And man, is it creepy. I'm reminded of Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan talked about once, I forget whether this was in one of his books or it was in an interview or something, but he was talking about, so he grew up in DC, I guess in the 50s. And he was talking about, so this might be like in the 60s or something, like early 60s, that he was talking about that how him and his friends used to play football in the park across from the White House. And, you know, just like kids, like 10-year-olds or whatever, playing football. And he said that you would see every now and then the president would come out. I don't know who it was at the time. Maybe it was fucking like, I think it must have been after Eisenhower. Taft,
they were airing out some of his farts. They'd wheel him out in the afternoon. Like,
get him out there, boys. No, it was after maybe Eisenhower. I don't know. I'm trying to think what. Yeah, in the 50s. Anyway, but so he said the president, you'd see the president come out, and he'd come out with like two security guards or two Secret Service officers, you know? It'd be like two guys and the president. And he said the president would like say hi to the kids and stuff and like walk around. And Pat Buchanan goes, he goes, yeah, that was a free country, you know? It's just like, there's the president, you know, there's the president and there's two guys and that's the, and look, I don't know. Obviously there's arguments over whether it was truly a free country or not. And there were certainly lots of problems, but it was at least a country that could, with some degree of legitimacy, claim to be a free country, you know, like it, you could say this is a free country and not immediately just like laugh in someone's face who said that, but that there is something powerful about that. And the difference between that and then contrasting that with seeing this kind of like military in DC blocking this off, you, the idea that this guy works for you is like so removed. This is like, has such a feel of a military dictatorship, you know? And I don't know how you could even claim that we live in a free country after this last year. And I understand that what I'm talking about is largely symbolic, but symbolism is important, you know, and it's very, like, to me, it's really creepy to watch the you know, these images of all of these fucking, like, this military presence in Washington, D.C. You know, we've been talking a lot since basically the beginning of this podcast about our military presence overseas. And it does seem like this is now being pointed inward. Which is unsettling to say the least.
If life gets worse here in any capacity, and people's bailout checks aren't coming, or their bailout checks aren't really worth all that much because there's inflation, or if there's any sort of economic collapse, these politicians will be less accessible than ever. You'll see more resources put towards their protection. This will be fucking Washington, D.C. permanently. No one's getting anywhere near there. These people will be totally, I'm enjoying the footage, like Lindsey Graham on airplanes, everyone's yelling at him. Same thing happened to Romney. People are pretty mad with these politicians. I think we're headed for a different environment where they're going to have to close themselves off.
Well, you would think that if the politicians were really the noble servants of the people, they wouldn't need such protection from their bosses, you know, but that's right. People are very upset with politicians. And, you know, again, it's not to say that, like, there isn't legitimate reasons for them to be concerned. I mean, I do think tempers are that hot.
If you take a step back and you think about what AOC is trying to take from you, if you were a, you know, common person, runs a business, what AOC is literally trying to take stuff from you. If she gets the green agenda passed or her wealth, like, she's trying to take stuff from you. It's almost odd that that lady's safe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. This is they're quite happy. They're quite happy to, like, you know, someone was posting this video clip where Tucker Carlson was arguing. It's like an old clip where Tucker Carlson was arguing with someone over the Green New Deal. And he was like, look, I haven't heard one of these plans that aren't going to raise energy prices. Like, do you have any, you know, like, is there any plan here that's not going to raise energy prices? And she's like, yeah, I'm worried about the earth being gone in 10 years. I'm not worried about energy prices. And it's like, that's, that basically, you know, demonstrates it all right there. Like, they, they look at you when you say energy prices and go like, oh, wait, so you care about numbers on a board? And it's and just like mock the idea. And you're like, no, you're talking about the guy who makes 50K a year and has two kids having to pay more at the pump. That's not nothing to him. That's like a really big deal. That means he doesn't get other stuff. You know, like that means his kids get less because of this. And they just have no sense of that. And that's, you know, that's what this year has been. And so what everybody kind of wants, like the distraction, is to just think about the Capitol riot and then be like, well, it's justified because look at these maniacs or something like that. But if you zoom out more, you know, you realize that, like, I mean, people had everything taken from that, like just in the way that you just put it, people had everything taken from them this last year. And like, yes, there were some fucking, you know, like responses to that that were not helpful. But to see the government pounce on this opportunity to really usher in this new era is, I don't know. I think it's really creepy and really dangerous. So, you know, that's, I'm gonna be interested to watch this one in 2 days. I guess there's Trump is not going. And Rand Paul.
No, he said he's going to throw an awesome fucking party, though. I'm curious to see what he does. Yeah. He's going to throw a party with everyone he pardons. It's going to be a pardon party. A couple hundred people eating milkshakes and, you know, the last bit of McDonald's on the government pay tab.
It's still just like leftover McDonald's from like the previous parties. He's like, look, they cut my party budget. OK, they're not letting me party anymore, but I got some stocked up. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our brand new sponsor, which is Bambi. When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR managers' salaries aren't cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, which is B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day to day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/POTP. That's Bambi.com/POTP to schedule your free HR audit. One more time, Bambi.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. Another thing, speaking of Trump, that I saw that I thought was really interesting was that there was a new NBC poll out just yesterday, I believe, that had him at 42% approval rating. Now, just to be clear, there have been other polls that have had him much lower. So I don't know, you know, exactly, you know, like take these polls with a grain of salt is more or less my point. I don't know. There were some other polls where he had slid more. There were some where he was up. He's always a little bit better in that Rasmussen poll than the other ones, but whatever. But it just seemed to me at least somewhat noteworthy and interesting that Donald Trump was polling in his approval rating in this new NBC poll basically the same that he has been for almost his entire presidency. I think the highest he got was like 45, 46% in that poll. And the lowest he got was like 39%. But 42 is right around where he's always been. And there are these weird, you know, we've talked about this throughout Trump's presidency, right? There would be these, I remember talking about this on SE Cup show, when they would be, the whole discussion would be like, what a terrible week for Donald Trump. Now, that was every week, was what a terrible week. And then I'd be like, I'm looking at his approval polls. They haven't budged. So you guys, yes, in the corporate press, we've all decided this was a terrible week for Trump. But according to the people, nothing's changed. And that it's just kind of interesting, this disconnect between what everybody is being fed and then what regular people actually believe.
And, you know, they're calling him up going like, so you still like him? Yeah. Well, you sure? Because, you know, he tried taking over the government. You sure you like him? He also called your mom fat. You sure you like him? And these are the same people that were saying that he was going to lose in a fucking landslide.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's clearly a lie, but it's crazy that they didn't come back and go, look how much he slid, even by their own metric.
Well, you think, like, the thing is
better impeach him. The whole country's outraged.
But this is one of the things that's been so on display since 2016 is just this tremendous disconnect between the establishment and regular people. And you see it all the time. I mean, but it's like the idea, you know, even like things like when the you know, Access Hollywood tape, the Grab 'Em by the Pussy tape came out and, you know, the whole media class is like, well, that's it. He's finished.
And the regular only natural Americans, handle. Where else are you going to grab from?
Yeah, right. But like regular Americans are just kind of like, shouldn't have said that. Anyway, what's this about jobs? You know, like it's just the values are so different and they're so isolated and removed and in their own bubble that they really just don't understand the average person. And so when they start analyzing, and these are the people who are they purport to speak for us. You know, like the politicians are supposed to be the, you know, our representatives. Obviously, that's stupid and not true, but that's what they claim. They're our representatives. The media are supposed to be like, you know, speaking on behalf of us or, you know, holding a light to power, you know, for us and all this stuff. And but yet there's this huge disconnect. And if you look, if you just watch the corporate press or you just read, some, you know, mainstream newspaper or something like that, if you look that the fall from, let's say, from when we were doing the live stream the night of the election, and we were doing it before, I don't know, like around midnight or something like that, maybe a little bit earlier, like around 11 p.m. or something. And at that point, Trump was killing it. Trump was like, oh shit, like he's gonna win Florida, he's gonna win Texas, he's gonna win, you know what I mean? And then, and he was winning in almost all of the states he needed. Like he was still up in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, all these states. Looked like it was quite possibly going to be a great night for Trump. So that, you know, that night to now, if you were just paying attention to the corporate press, you would think this was a stock that went from $100,000 a share to $2 a share. You know what I mean? Like it's just crashed. But then you looked at this approval poll and they go, yeah, we got it right at the same place. Now, isn't that just kind of fascinating in a way, the disconnect between those two? That like one person would be like, okay, this stock has gone from being the you know, highest stock in the world to absolutely plummeting. And someone else goes, I see it exactly the same. And you're like, wow, that's whoever you think is right or wherever the truth may be, maybe somewhere in the middle, or maybe they're both wrong and it's nowhere in that zone. But that disconnect is like stunning. And it's interesting to be like, okay, so then where do we go from here? Like, if you guys see this so much differently than the average person does, that's got to have some type of ramification. And I think it's one of the things we've been talking about a lot, that now this whole system, and a lot of this depends on what the Republicans do in the Senate. You know, if they vote to impeach it's like, so what's going to happen here? And interestingly enough, you know, Rand Paul talked about this and he said, that he thinks a third of the Republican Party will bail if Donald Trump is convicted in the Senate. And I think he's quite possibly right. I mean, I just don't see how you're going to have, you know, this guy Trump, who still has, at least seems to, still has his hardcore base of support, which makes up the overwhelming majority of Republican voters. You're going to have that party turn their back on him and go along with the whole narrative that this guy is the worst thing ever and deserves to, you know, whatever, be destroyed. When that narrative is so removed from what the base thinks, I don't see how this doesn't destroy the party.
30%, that'd be, well, I think ideally, if one party splits, I think the other party will split, because then there's a pathway to victory as being the ultra-socialist, and I think that creates more room to actually forge a more viable libertarian party. So
no, I agree with you.
We can only hope they split.
I completely agree. I think that the best thing that could happen in this country would be if the Republicans and Democrats both split. I think it would be really great to see them both split into two parties. So if you, with the Republicans, you could have basically like the establishment, you know, liberal Republicans or whatever they would want to call themselves. And then you could have the conservative party, just let them split into two. And then with the Democrats, obviously, right, you could have the kind of neoliberal centrist party and then have the fucking, you know, the Democratic Socialist or. Yeah, right. What'd you say? What'd you call it?
The dummy squad.
The dummy squad. Yeah, right, right. But I don't know. I really don't know who I dislike more out of those groups. But, you know, it's always like the fucking the battle between the liberals and the leftists, you know, is like you're like, oh, OK, so the fucking liberals or the neoliberals or whatever, the establishment Democrats, they, you know, they want to bomb every third world country on the map. And they want to prop up this whole banking system and all this type of like, you know, crony bullshit. But they'll at least let us have prices so we don't all starve to death, you know? And then like the fucking, you have like the more, you know, socialist types on the left who are like, yeah, no, look, we don't want to fucking, you know, bomb third world countries and we don't want to prop up this banking system and stuff, but we just, you can't have prices. You know, like, but then we all starve to death. You know, like, so I really, I don't know. This is tough. I guess I'll pick the one where I don't starve to death. Who was it? Was it Will Grigg who used to say, it was one of them who said, the best thing about a liberal is that they're not a leftist. And the best thing about a leftist is that they're not a liberal. But I think that pretty much sums it up. Anyway, but I do think that if those were to split up into four parties and then all of a sudden you have like the Libertarian Party and the Green Party and all like that, you make it a much more competitive landscape. And I think that would just be good for the country, you know? So this might overall work out really well, but it also could go bad. So that's far from a guarantee. But I do think that in the short term, it is going to be devastating for the Republican Party and therefore good for the Democratic Party. What I don't understand about this, like how it could possibly work, is you just go, who can it be? Who is the person who could rise up and hold together the Republicans as a party? And I think the more you think it through, the more you realize that it's basically impossible. I mean, even Trump himself, right? Like, let's say he isn't prevented from being able to run again in the future. Trump at this point would have, I think, a really tough time. You know, Donald Trump, so much of his brand relied on being the winner. And whether you think it's fairly or unfairly, he's the big loser here, you know? And whether you blame him or not, his term was a disaster, you know? Like it ended in disaster. And I just, and there's certainly a lot of people who just wouldn't want to do the Trump thing again. You know, I know there's a lot of people who would, but there's a lot of people who wouldn't. And so it doesn't seem like it could be him. And then you go like, who else? Who else could pull that coalition together? And right now, I don't see anyone. So we're in for some interesting, volatile times in this country.
What's your prediction on impeachment? You think it happens?
You know, I'm pretty torn right now. I think it's up in the air, but I think there's a good chance it happens. I really do. I think that when push comes to shove, the Republicans are either wimps or just straight up working for the establishment. And I think this is what those
this
types
is their chance
want.
This boot is their
chance. Yeah.
Now, there's talk about whether or not Trump will pardon himself. And one of their big claims for why he shouldn't is because that it would be an admission of guilt. Now, I would think if I'm Trump, I mean, he just cried that an election that was won wasn't won. I think it's pretty easy for him to make the claim, hey, this thing has always been turned against me, and I just want to make sure that I can live a good life so that I can continue fight for you guys to have it. Like, they're gonna scream and yell no matter what. I almost think he'd be foolish not to pardon himself and his family on the way out.
Yeah, like, I've heard some people, you know, make arguments that he can't legally pardon himself, and then others make arguments that he can. I, you know, I'm not really an expert enough to understand whether legally that would hold up.
I pardon myself for making an illegal pardon.
Yeah,
double
right.
Pardon.
Double pardon. You can't undo a double pardon. I also, in the pardon, I wrote no takesies, backsies. So good luck fighting that. Yeah, I mean, he certainly can pardon his family preemptively and a lot of other people. So, yeah, I'd understand why he would. If I were him, I'd do that. Sure, because I really do think they're going to try to come at this guy. I mean, I think they've already made it pretty clear that him just leaving is not enough for them. That is not enough. He needs to be destroyed. And I think that's their attitude, and also that his movement needs to be destroyed. That all of the people, I really do think that, and you know, I've thought about this a bit, and I said on the last episode, I think this was on our last episode, where I said, there's been no effort to incorporate the Trump movement, right? Like I was saying on the last episode, there's no effort to go like, okay, yeah, we'll give you a little more border security, but you're not getting the wall, or, you know, just what they typically do to kind of peel away, you know, maybe we'll take 10%, 20% off the top, that'll go, okay, well, we got our reform through or something like that. There's been none of that, you know? So all they're trying to do is squash this thing, is to put it down. Deperson people, deplatform people, impeach the president. You know, this is, and I think the Democratic assessment of the situation is just that this movement will die out and be replaced demographically. And that if we can just hold it off, that this is basically going to go away and it won't be a threat to us in the future in terms of winning national elections. So then they might be right about that. I don't know. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Sheath Underwear. Sheath makes the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever worn in my life. If you're sick of boxers that are too loose or briefs that are too tight, Sheath is for you. Here's what makes Sheath unique. Their stretchy fabric is made out of moisture-wicking technology. They feel super soft, keep everything cool, comfortable, and in place. It's the perfect underwear for working out. Plus, the most unique thing about Sheath underwear is they have these dual pouches that keep your man parts separated, which prevents them from sticking together. It's huge for working out or being in hot environments. I will tell you, I was a little skeptical of the dual pouch thing at first, but I love it. It's a total game changer. I am not kidding you. They're the only underwear I wear at this point, the most comfortable underwear I've ever owned in my life. And by the way, if you're not interested in separating your man parts with the dual pouches, I still recommend Sheath. You can just wear them like regular boxer briefs, and they're the most comfortable boxer briefs you'll ever put on in your life. Plus, the owner is a huge fan of this show, so please support them for supporting us. Go to sheathunderwear.com, get the most comfortable underwear you will ever own, and if you use the promo code PROBLEM20, you'll get 20% off your order. That's sheathunderwear.com, promo code PROBLEM20 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the show. There is a Donald Trump, for many reasons, needs to be destroyed in these people's minds, not just defeated electorally. Like, he needs to be destroyed.
In terms of him being destroyed, how do you predict he makes his money when he leaves? Because I actually think he's going to have some financing issues. I don't know his finances that well, but it seemed that he was running a little bit of the Donald Trump Ponzi scheme where he could get capital that no one else could, because it was just perceived, it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump's not going to stiff up, so it's Donald Trump. And there's already banks saying that they're not like going to renew his loans. Now, it could be Saudi Arabia or Russia just steps right in and goes, hey, here's all the capital you need. Could be. I wouldn't know, but that's not going to look great for him. Or maybe he just goes on tour and starts actually selling tickets. What do you think's the moneymaker move for him?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question. I think that Donald Trump, particularly the fact that he did a lot of business with big banks, New York City, high roller types, I think he's going to be completely cut off from all of those corridors. I just don't think he's going to get that anymore. But Trump's a very resourceful guy. And like you said, he's still a guy, he's the most famous human being who's ever existed. His name brand still has something. So I wouldn't be surprised if he finds some avenue. But my prediction would be, I think Donald Trump is going to have a lifetime of headaches. I mean, I just think like he's going to face criminal charges. I think the Southern District of New York is going to go after him hard. I think businesses are going to refuse to work with him. I think he's just, I really do think there will be tremendous pressure put on people to destroy this guy as much as they possibly can. I think that for a lot of different reasons, but ultimately just the fact that, look, in the same way that they're going to come down really hard on people who stormed the Capitol building, a big part of it is, you know, to de-incentivize anybody to ever do something like this again. you know, which makes sense from their perspective. So, you know, you want a big fat deterrent put on anybody else who's thinking of behaving this way, whether it's somebody who's going to run a political campaign against the swamp and all of this stuff. You want to ruin that person to let them know, okay, you want to try to do this shit? Well, this is what you're sacrificing. And same with all those other people, you know? I mean, that's they want a deterrent. So they're going to come down hard. Oh, there you go. Yeah, you got it. You made it this long. You're fine. Yeah, remember back in March, someone got COVID. You were like planning a funeral and shit. Nowadays, you're like, eh, he'll be back on Wednesday. Whatever, it's fine. But yeah, so I don't know. You know, that is a very good question, but I don't know. You know, he does have a lot of money right now, but it seems to me like he is in a business of being like very over leveraged. And so he, you know, if he can't get loans and stuff like that, it could all fall apart pretty quickly. But that's what they'd like to see. No question about it. They want to see Donald Trump broke, preferably in jail, absolute failure, declaring bankruptcy, all of this shit. I think that's a big part of the plan. And, you know, we'll see what's happening. Okay. What else did we want to talk about?
Minimum wage, $1.9 trillion. Biden's yes. Really ruining shit right out the gate.
Right out the gate. Not gonna waste time. So the minimum wage part, this is part of the $1.9 trillion proposal that he's laid out?
I just seen the articles that both say the $1.9 trillion and that he's pushing for a $15 minimum wage law. I don't know if the $15 minimum wage law is a separate executive action or if it's somehow right. Tied into the $1.9 trillion proposal. I mean, both are horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but the minimum wage is so funny because, like, you put a guy in charge because he's supposed to make the best decisions. I don't think there's an economist in the entire country, even a liberal one, who's going to tell you the minimum wage laws will do anything other than reduce the available jobs. Like, you're just going to be sending more jobs overseas or basically hiring more robots. Or you're going to end up in some sort of inflationary environment where the $15 you're paying is really more like $7. You're not winning. Nobody is going to benefit from this in any capacity.
Well, it's in addition to all of that, which is true. Maybe what I disagree with is that nobody's going to benefit because the big beneficiaries are going to be big business, which has been the benefit. You know, they've benefited from this for years.
They'll just outsource more jobs.
Well, right. And also just the fact that it becomes like all other regulations, it becomes a barrier to entry. It's much harder for smaller companies to keep up with these forced wage increases than it is for the big companies. So this is, I mean, just imagine, you know, small mid-sized businesses who have been put through the worst year, you know, imaginable by government restrictions. And now they're also going to come in and tell you, oh yeah, you also still can't open up and hire somebody unless you pay the wage that we determined. I mean, this is, you know, there's already these businesses who had razor thin profit margins to begin with. Now they're probably in tremendous debt if they're still, you know, haven't gone under from the last, you know, fucking 9 months of not being able to actually operate. And even if they are actually able to operate, right? Like there's so many, like in the economy, there's so many businesses that are like affected by other sectors and everything is kind of, interlinked. So even if you're a business that was able to stay open throughout, you know, this entire lockdown shit, well, so many other businesses have gone out. So many other people's economic, you know, livelihoods have been affected that you probably have less customers. So like everybody's hurting in some way or another, except people at the very top. And so now, you know, you're coming off this horrible year. And in addition to that, you're going to be forced to raise people's wages. Just a lot of people aren't going to be able to do it. It's one more chapter in this attack on the middle class. And no, but big businesses appreciate a raise in the minimum wage. This is part of the reason why Walmart was calling for a $15 minimum wage for a while. There's nothing Walmart would like better than to make everybody go, oh yeah, everybody's got to raise their wages. Of course. It's like if you're the fucking, if you're in a competition and you're the tallest person in the pool, like you're a 7 foot guy in the pool and everybody else is 5 feet. You're like, I think we should raise the water up to 6 feet. You know, It kills all of your competition. It's like, yeah, they'll all drown. It is harder for you. You know, it does hurt you as well, but it's going to hurt your competition way more than it's going to hurt you. And then you own the pool. And at the end, you get to swim in a pool with a bunch of dead bodies. All right, not the best analogy I've ever come up with, but you get the point that I'm trying to make.
When you get a minimum wage law, like, you're putting in minimum effort. You're like, they're paying me the least amount of money that they possibly could. There's no feeling of I earned it, or look, I'm making a little bit more than minimum wage, or I pumped up my income. You're really going to end up, you're going to bring a lot of what the worst of socialism is, which is that people aren't motivated, because all of a sudden you're going to have managers who are making this exact same money as like the lowest, because they're not allowed to, you know, the lowest people have to be paid 15. You can't really afford to pay your managers anymore. And the manager's like, why the fuck am I managing? I could be just, you know, half putting stuff on the fucking shelf.
Well, yeah. And you end up, I mean, there's all types of, you know, honestly, with the minimum wage argument, it's almost, you get to a point where you have to accept this thing that's very hard for libertarians particularly to accept. But that, you know, it's like, if you're battling someone with logic and they're just working off emotion, and at a certain point you almost have to accept, you're like, oh, okay, this is just... I'm not going to win this because they don't care about the logic of it. Like, that's not really primarily what's motivating people. And it's not primarily what motivates people. But it's almost like when people still bring up the gender pay gap or something like that. And you're like, yeah, but this has been debunked like a million times. I mean, anyone who cares to look into this with an open mind is going to be like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm sorry, this was just taken to the wood chipper. Like, this argument holds no weight. And the fact that there's even still a conversation about this just lets you know that it's like, man, people just do not care about superior arguments. And there's something kind of depressing about that. But you know, like, I don't know. This is just, the argument's been taken on so long. I've been fucking debunking this shit for so many years, but like, yeah, there's all you're doing by, you know, raising the minimum wage is not raising the ground below people so they are sitting on higher ground. You're raising the bar that they have to jump up to. So if you say, okay, if somebody's, you know, making $12 an hour, maybe it's because they bring in $14 an hour of value, and the boss is willing to pay him 12, and then he gets an extra $2 of value, and that's the deal. Everybody, you know, benefits from this relationship. Now, if somebody's bringing in $14 an hour worth of value and you raise the minimum wage to $15, then the boss is losing money to employ that person. And so the logical move then becomes to fire that person or to make it up somewhere else. So to your point, what happens is then if somebody else, you know, is making $20 an hour and they were due for a raise to $25 an hour, but someone else is making $10 an hour and you're forced to give them a raise to $15 an hour, maybe you just don't give that other guy a raise. And then, okay, now you have the same profit margin. But what does that do? It makes, in many cases, it makes the guy who was qualified, did put in the work, does bring the value to the table, not get what he deserves. So it's just all types of fucked up things. But beyond any of that, it's just like, it's such flawed economic thinking that you know, it's all wages are is a price in the economy. They're the price of labor. And if you think that price controls work and that they can make us more prosperous and, or, you know, more fair society or something like that, then okay. But why just have price controls on this one? Like, why just pick this one arbitrary price, which is the price of labor, and not even the price of labor, it's the price of labor at the lowest end. You're picking one aspect of one price. If you think that price controls can make us a more effective economy, a more fair economy, a more just economy, why not have price controls all over the place? Why not have price on wheat and flour and corn and everything else? And you can make the exact same arguments. You know, you can make the argument that, like, oh, you know, the price of wheat is too high. If we lowered it, poor people would be able to afford more. So why not lower those prices? Why? But any decent economist will explain to you very quickly why price controls don't work and why there's a real disaster there. And it's just obvious. It's like all of these things are, you know, fragile. And if you just say, oh, we're going to force you to charge less for wheat, then people make way less profit producing wheat. And so they're less incentivized to produce it. And you get people producing less of it. And then those people you were trying to help end up starving. And this has happened in countries throughout the world. This is, you know, if you want price controls, go look at Venezuela and tell me how well that's working out to help people. So anyway, it's just, you know, it's not to say that raising the minimum wage is going to, you know, lead to people starving, but it will without doubt lead to more suffering than we would have without it. And after this year, you know, it's just a real kick in the gut for the country to just start fucking over people. And the really tragic thing about the minimum wage is that it hurts those people who it purports to help. Like it really does hurt people at the bottom of the economic scale. Look, the truth is, if you're somebody who would be, let's say you're somebody who would be looking for a job that pays you $8 an hour, right? Like you're somebody who would willingly take that job that pays you $8 an hour. Obviously, you're not living a great life. Things aren't going fantastically well for you. Now, maybe that's no fault of your own. Maybe it's partially a fault of your own. In most cases, it's probably a mix. But, you know, sometimes it's no fault of your own. Sometimes it's entirely your fault. But in most cases, it's a mix of, you know, bad circumstances. And maybe you made some bad decisions also. But you are in a situation where you're like, look, I'm willing to work for fucking $8 an hour. I don't bring a whole lot to the table. Like you're not somebody who's like incredibly skilled, who brings a tremendous amount of value, who's willing to work for $8 an hour. That person doesn't exist. So you're a person who's basically needs anything you can get. And the truth is that you probably, right, don't have a high school degree, definitely don't have a college degree, definitely don't have a wealth of experience in the job market, because nobody who has those takes a job for $8 an hour. Or the vast majority don't, you know, maybe in some special circumstances. But so that person, by taking the job, you're at least like, well, now I got something on a resume. I mean, maybe you take that job and you do a really great job at it, or, you know, and you get yourself a raise. Or at least maybe when you apply for another job, you go, look, I did this job. I was always on time. I was always this. I worked really well. I have a great, you know, letter of recommendation. And you can move up. You can get some experience. You can add a little something, you know, take yourself from the shitty situation you're in to a slightly less shitty situation, which is really what life is all about, you know? Life, there's a lot of suffering in life, but if you can make it a little bit less miserable, then you're doing something. And maybe you keep doing that and you eventually make yourself in a fairly decent situation. But if you're a boss who's considering, you're like, eh, maybe you're on the fence about whether you would hire someone for $8 an hour. And you go, eh, all right, I'll give this kid a shot. Well, now make it $15 an hour. You know, are you more or less likely to hire that person? You're obviously much less likely. So what you've done now is you've taken this person who's in a shitty situation already, and you've robbed them of one of the potential lifelines that they might have. Like one way that they might, it's really evil when you think about it. You take somebody and, you know, somebody like, it's like, it's not as if you're, you know, a minimum wage law does not legally mandate that you have to hire someone at $15 an hour, right? It just makes it illegal to hire them at $8 an hour or 9 or 10 or up to 14, you know? So all you're doing is illegalizing a voluntary agreement. It's awful. It's a horrible thing to do. Luckily, the one silver lining in minimum wage laws is that in many parts of the world, they're just not enforced. I mean, that's true in New York City for sure. You go into every single restaurant in New York City and there's like Mexicans working in the back and shit. None of them are making the fucking minimum wage, but no one's really cracking down on it. But now, you know, who knows going forward, because we've already set the precedent of cracking down on businesses quite a bit over all this COVID shit. So I wouldn't be surprised. You know, this is like one of the terrible fucking things about all of this is that now you have all of these people who are kind of used to cracking down on small businesses. And I wouldn't be surprised if they want to continue doing that.
I haven't been in New York in a while, but they better not crack down on that shit, because Mexicans, they make the best sandwiches. Like, it's not even close. I mean, the fucking five-star chef versus one of these dudes at a bodega, I'm going bodega guy all day.
That is one of the best things about New York City, that you can go get a solid sandwich almost anywhere. Like, you never, in New York City, I don't think there's any place on the island of Manhattan where you're five blocks away from a pretty good sandwich. I don't think it exists. I might be wrong about that, but you'd be hard pressed to find a spot that within five blocks you can't find a decent sandwich. Look at Rob. He's getting emotional. Rob's about to fucking start crying. He's left the city. This is the one thing he misses the most. All right, you keep cutting in and out, huh, buddy?
Yeah, we're freezing a bunch now. We had a good run. Zoom, it's good for about 50 minutes, and then it starts going, you know what? No more.
All right, we're going to have to edit this out a little bit. We kind of need, like, one more fucking topic, something to bring up. Did we have anything that I didn't mention? Oh, shit.
News of people in the White House upset with the smell of Kamala Harris's pussy?
Well, I just feel like that goes without saying. All right. Well, I did, before we wrap up today's show, I did just want to mention that favorite guest of the podcast, the great Scott Horton, did release his new book. I believe it came out yesterday, perhaps the day before yesterday, but it came out on the 30th anniversary of the war in Iraq, the George H.W. Bush war in Iraq. And Scott Horton, as I've said for a long time, is like the most incredible mind. He's the most important voice on the most important issue, which of course is war and peace. I really, really want all the Part of the Problem listeners to give a big push to this book and try to make it as successful as possible. Scott sent it over to me, and I'm like four chapters in. It's just incredible, as the last one was as well. But the book is called Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, which is, it's, look, I just can't recommend it highly enough. Of course, we're going to get Scott on the show in the next week. We'll do an episode about it. We probably, from reading the first few chapters of the book, I already know that we won't be able to really discuss the whole thing on a podcast, but we'll do a podcast to give a nice overview of the book. But make sure you go pick up a copy of that. Scott is a great libertarian, a great friend of this show, and overall just a great person. So make sure you go support him. And yeah, just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. So I guess on our next episode, we can talk about the inauguration and how that goes. It's going to be something, man. It's really something that this is, you're going to have in this inauguration, right? It's going to be Joe Biden becoming president next to Kamala Harris. You're going to have Bill and Hillary Clinton, Barack and Michelle Obama. Like, it's just going to be such a representation of the power elite taking back the presidency, taking back control of the government. And this is going to be done surrounded by the military. It's really, I mean, again, like I said before, I know this is just purely symbolic, but it's really amazing symbolism, you know, like really just incredible to watch and kind of depressing, but you know, new chapter always breeds new opportunities. And so we'll see how this whole thing ends up going. Anyway, that's our episode for today. Thank you guys very much for listening. Go check out Robbie the Fire's podcast, Run Your Mouth. Also, follow him on Twitter at Robbie the Fire.
And I'm a published author now. I got an article up on revolutiononrecliner.com. You can check it out. I posted an article.
Oh, very cool. All right. Yeah. I'll make sure I go check that out as well. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. See you Wednesday. Peace.